This is Thursday afternoon, special meeting of the Libertarians of the World at Hong Kong Excelsior Hotel, Thursday, 7th of September, 1978.
This is the way of new organizations, of course. They always meet in closets and in conspiratorial places, which is where we've been relegated by the Japanese hierarchy. Libertarianism will take a little longer to get to Japan, perhaps. My name is Roger McBride. For those of you who don't know, I'm an attorney, not an economist by profession. And I've been involved in the political aspect of the libertarian movement in the United States. We entitled this session, The Political Prospects of Libertarianism Around the World. I'm not going to be enhanced if people talk over there.
Excuse us, please.
And by that, of course, we mean the advancement in a political sense of the ideas that most of us here at the Mont Pelerin Society, in a general sense, share. Now, we all understand, broadly speaking, what we mean by libertarianism, which is a free society and a free economy. And we're not here in this one-hour session to worry the details of how far some would go down the high road to liberty and where along the way some of the rest of us might stop. It's sufficient that those of us engaged in the political movement around the world are going a hell of a long way down that road before we reach the point where we're going to debate one another. There are places to debate how far we go and where we stop, but this is not it. We're simply here to compare notes and to find out where we're going in maybe 15 countries around the world. We want to have a tiny view of what's happening and of the prospects of the political victory of our ideas. Prospects, which I might say, that didn't exist 10 years ago. In 1968, a meeting like this to discuss what's happening in a dozen or 15 countries around the world would have been unthinkable. It would have been laughed at. And yet today we can even sit here and take it seriously and know that not only the prospects exist, but they are measurable, even though, of course, yet we've achieved no significant victories, as far as I know. Now, we're going to have 1 hour. We're starting a tiny bit late because of this confusion over where we are going to meet. We have about 9 people who are going to discuss various different countries. We're going to give them 5 minutes each, except Dr. Rothbard, who will talk about the United States and then give us a wind-up. So he gets 10 minutes. All the rest are 5. And we're going to be ruthless. If I can find something to substitute for a gavel like this, I'll bang it when 5 minutes is up. In fact, I'll bang it once at 4.5 minutes and stop you at 5, so that we do get out of here on time and that we're not subjected to an endless discussion of these things. Those who want to ask questions at the end may. We'll adjourn the meeting in just exactly 1 hour, and if those who want to stay on afterward and ask more questions care to, that's up to them, and we'll be around for a while. Now, obviously, because so many people haven't been able to attend this, they've been at home, a lot of us who are going to make some remarks about our countries don't come from there. I'm going to open up by talking very briefly about 2 countries, and from neither of which do I come, Italy and the United States and Canada. Italy, I have very little to say about, except that we do know in the United States that there is something starting in Rome. There's a magazine called Claustrophobia, put out by a gentleman named Riccardo Lacanca in Rome, and he has a libertarian title to his publishing organization. We've read it. We know very little about the man. We do guess that because so much of what's in it is politically oriented, that they're contemplating some form of political libertarianism in Italy, but we don't know. Just a word to tell you that it exists. Canada, of course, is next door to the United States, and I'm pretty familiar with it, having spoken up there many times at meetings of the Libertarian Party. One was started there under that name 5 or 6 years ago and has concentrated largely in the province of Ontario, which is by far the most populous province of that country. It has consistently grown after a little hesitation in the beginning when I guess they thought they could take over Ontario at the first election and saw that it took a bit more than enthusiasm and dedication to principle to succeed, but they regrouped and are growing rapidly. At the last provincial election, they fielded candidates for 30 or 40 offices. Some of them got 2, 3% of the vote, enough to encourage them to go on, and this is by spending something like $1,000 Hong Kong. Not too bad, considering. And they were learning a lot about political technique and how to do it. They're holding meetings. They publish a bi-monthly newsletter in Ontario, which is semi-professional. Just recently, they got some elegant office space donated by one of the memberships. They're furnishing it with IBM typewriters and whatnots. They've got literature tables. They have telephones installed and people who are beginning to serve the office on a full-time basis, so that from nothing they have grown into something that has real potential. In February, two of the Ontario Party went out to Vancouver in British Columbia, a pilot for Air Canada and a computer expert from IBM or one of the other big companies, and they happened to be on a radio program to an audience who had never heard of libertarianism, and in an hour's time they got so many excited phone calls that they stayed over an extra day, talked to people who had wanted to meet them. Somebody forked over $10,000 Canadian on the condition that they start the party there in Vancouver. Mind you, this is a part of Canada that never heard the word libertarian in January of this year. By April, these two guys had dropped their jobs, gone to Vancouver, settled in, and started to recruit a party organization. In July, I spoke there just before coming out here. They put cards in the windows of little stores and advertised in the newspapers. 250 people showed up to hear some unknown foreigner, me, speak. And by the time we got through, they were deriding the conservatives out there and saying, why don't you turn libertarian? So it's obvious that they have a tremendous impetus going in Vancouver and in British Columbia. A long way to go, of course. Because they're naive, they have yet to learn all kinds of things, political technique, money raising, and all the rest. But they have created something out of nothing, and they've got a momentum going that didn't exist at all. And I might say that in Canada, most of the people there share with us in the United States the firm conviction that because we are right, and because our ideas do work, we, in time, are going to be victorious. Maybe not as soon as we would like, but certainly a lot sooner than the opposition believes or would like to have us. That's my 5 minutes. The first speaker will be Sudha Shenoy, who will speak both on Britain and on India.
Thank you, Roger. I'll start with India, principally because the report on India is going to be very brief. Political prospects for libertarianism are, I'm afraid, either nil or non-existent or negative. I just want to correct one possible misapprehension. The present government is not any better than the previous one. Mrs. Gandhi was corrupt in a particular area. The present government is corrupt in another area. It consists of the people who were political opponents of the previous regime, had personality and other disagreements. The only thing that binds them together is the fact that they were opposed to Mrs. Gandhi. And putting some of them in jail meant little more than the fact that they were both fighting for the same thing, and she happened to be on top and they didn't. They made one small change. They managed to remove some of the controls on the movement of food grains between zones, and that is about the only sort of hopeful report I can make. Otherwise, everything is as it's a mixture as before, and everything remains as it was before. Now, the political opinion in India, public opinion in India, is dominated by left-wing opinion in the Western world. If all development economists tomorrow turned free market, you'd see a change in India. But until they do, we are not going to see what we would like to see. In Britain, once again at the political level, the situation is such that we cannot in fact have the sort of libertarian political party, explicit libertarian political party that one has in other parts of the world. The political system is such that could not succeed. However, within the Tory party, we do have the Selsdon group, so-called, which was founded because the Tory party met at Selsdon Park Hotel in Kent some years ago and outlined a program which was certainly free market, if nothing else, and then, of course, went back on it when they were in power. A bunch of wet dish rags is what the Tory party is. So in order to try and maintain some sort of continuity, the Selsdon group was found to try and insist that the Tories should try and follow these principles. Now, the Selsdon group operates by trying to change opinion within the Tory party. It issues briefs, it issues pamphlets, it summons MPs to meetings in the House of Commons, grills them and demands why they don't follow appropriate policies, and in general acts as very much of a ginger group. To some extent, it means that at least the ideas are kept alive, they are kept operative, people know about them, and there is the option, the opening, the possibility of further change. And the fact that this didn't exist 10 years ago is, I think, itself at least a sign of some sort of progress. The intellectual level, I think I can say that signs are hopeful. Keynes is definitely dead. That is the one hopeful thing I can say. Between the first and the second editions of Tiger by the Tail, he died sometime. A small Karl Menger Society continues to work, holding seminars, consists of three or four people who talk to each other, but at least they continue. It is there. At the University of Birmingham, Professor Steve Littlechild is beginning to come round, and Jack Wiseman from the University of York is definitely becoming more sympathetic. There are other academic names one could mention. Now, this is the beginning from small acorns, great oak trees grow. This is the beginning. I can see possibly this continues in the long term. We can see a change in the political climate. But once again, if one looks at the situation 10 years ago or even earlier, when I was an undergraduate, there was nothing like this. I had to read Murray's Sub Rosa under the table, as it were. And it might be possible now to speak out a bit more openly. I think, Mr. Chairman, that is about all that I can say usefully at this stage.
Thank you very much, Susan.
The next person will be Viv Forbes from Australia. Where do you want to stand, Viv?
Come on.
Over here.
I'm going to be here.
Would you rather be over here?
There's a lot happening in the libertarian movement in Australia, and I think there is a great future for us. But in the short time available, I'd like to emphasise just one message which you may find useful that I think I've discovered in activity. The message is this: there is no easy way. You know, all the time I'm being earbashed by people who think they've got the secret to success. On the boat yesterday, I met a man who tried to convince me that the only possible way to succeed was to work through the established parties. My answer to that sort of question is, fine, which party are you going to join? We also get all the time, why don't you concentrate all your resources on this state or this election or my pet project? And that way we can really give it a thrashing and we can really win that way. Now, these sort of ideas, and there are numerous versions of them, are all versions of what I call the myth of finite resources. They all assume that there are a fixed amount of resources available to the libertarian movement, and if only some wise leader can get a hold of those resources and move them around like pieces on the chessboard, we can win. Now, that is a myth. There is not a fixed amount of resources available to us. For example, you find people who will have nothing to do with political activity as such. Now, if that is the only avenue available, the resources and effort of those people will not be available to the movement. The resources will decrease. The conclusion I come to from this sort of analysis is that the more activities we engage in, the greater will be our resources. It's just like free enterprise and individual initiative in politics. And this is what I think is an invaluable lesson. In Australia, the libertarian effort is occurring in about four areas, and in ascending order of increasing aggressiveness, you could call them education, lobbying, infiltration, and direct political action. In the education field, we have the Centre for Independent Studies, you've probably heard about, run by Greg Lindsay, who's at this conference. It is a purely educational body which is doing a lot of good work in the intellectual academic circles, particularly in southern Australia. We've also got an infant foundation for economic education, which is modelled precisely on the lines of Leonard Reed's organisations, which distributes books, arranges seminar shows, films and that sort of thing. In the lobby area, we are taking over or setting up special interest lobby groups whose aims agree with ours. And the sort of things we've done is we have set up the National Firearms Council, which opposes confiscation and registration of firearms. We've set up the Property Owners PRAG, the Property Owners Action Group, which opposes compulsory acquisition of land by government housing corporations. We control one branch of the Right to Work Association, which opposes compulsory unionism. We've set up the Ratepayers Association, and we sit on the Council of the Taxpayers Association. We've got close contacts with the Cannabis Research Foundation, whose aim is to expose the myths of drug prohibition. We hold executive positions in the Civil Liberties Group. We have members sitting on the controlling boards of Chambers of Commerce, Chambers of Mines, the Small Business and Self-Employed Association, and one of the members of IPA is here at this conference here. At the third level of aggressiveness, we encourage infiltration of other political parties. If somebody comes along and says, I think the only way to do it is through the other parties, we help him. We say, sure, we'll give you all our literature, we'll put you on our mailing list, you can consider yourself a member and we'll keep it quiet. Whatever you like, we'll help you. We have on our mailing list something like 10 members of parliament and a large number of people in other political parties. The fourth level of activity is direct political action, and I think this is probably the most effective because it generates publicity, and I believe the only way to have any real effect on a politician is to kick him where it hurts, kick him in the ballot box, kick him good and hard. And in this area, we have a libertarian political party. Each state of Australia, in fact, has an autonomous libertarian political party. In South Australia, it's called the Workers' Party. In all other states, it's called the Progress Party. The Progress Party is 2 years old. It has contested a federal election, about four state elections, and numerous local government elections. In the federal election, we got somewhere between 2 and 4% of the primary vote. In the state elections, we get between 5 and 10% of the primary vote, with above 15, and our best result so far was 19% of the primary votes cast. Members have been elected to about three local government positions. Now, because of the preferential voting system in Australia, a party which can control between 5 and 10% of the vote can be very influential and can affect the results of elections. So the Progress Party and the Workers' Party in Australia have the potential to become significant political forces. And in the frontier states, we certainly are doing this.
30 seconds.
In the future, I see the key to the future for the libertarian parties is persistence. It doesn't really matter what you do, you've got to keep doing it. If you put it in military terms, I would say we must fight on all fronts, we must press on no matter what the outcome, and don't stop for casualties. And to those among us who believe they have an idea which will guarantee the instantaneous success of libertarian politics, I would say ideas without action are but words on the wind.
Thank you a lot, Biz. The next one is Mike Van Natten, who's going to talk to us about Benelux, and incredibly enough, also Zambia.
Well, Holland, I started 4 years ago, and we have 100 people together. We have a newsletter, we have a bookshop. The only visible thing we have is we created a small business organization. It is 300 members, and it's starting, well, it has small activities, but it's really viable, and it will continue to grow. We have one funny situation. One of our members is the richest man of Holland, but we haven't got ideas enough, really, or we haven't found the real idea or the real organization to suit his money. So this is a very funny situation, but it confirms what our friend said. The money is there only when you have the ideas. We had Mobus Glistrup from Denmark invited to Holland. We could get about 120 people, but nobody was really enthusiastic about it. Now I'm coming to the second country, Belgium. The next day he went to Belgium, and there he got 350 people, and they were all delighted. Our friend Fred Dekkers, who started, I think, only a year and a half ago, and who never got more than 12 people for his libertarian group, decided to become a political party, and all of a sudden he got all the money and all the people he wanted. Well, I think he has no more than 50 people right now, but it's a going concern, the Radical Party, as it is called, and I think he will do better than we are doing in Holland right now. I should go to Zambia now, I think. I have a trading company in Zambia where I spend a lot of time, and there they have a very funny situation. 14 years ago, just before independence, Kenneth Kaunda, who is now the president, went giving speeches and said, when I will be president, I will protect life, liberty and property, just as Thomas Jefferson did. We will have no social security. We can take care of these things without the help of government. We don't want to increase taxation to finance all these things. We don't want minimum wage because we care for employment. He was a libertarian in short. In long, he was not. Gradually, he first tried his capitalist society, then 2 years later, he tried his cooperative society, then he tried a humanist society, then he went to China, he came back with the Chinese society, and today is socialist society. No surprise that Zambia is bankrupt. I clipped together all the clippings, libertarian clippings from his book. He presented it to him, and I said, shall we write a book about this? He was delighted. He said, that's me. So I wrote it a little bit better. It's now 75 pages long, but he has become slightly less enthusiastic. The reason is, I think, he's getting a lot of development aid from the countries he is criticizing and has been criticizing all along. Let me come to the end with Europe. I am still a lawyer in Brussels, and I'm trying to advise the European Association of Manufacturers to do something. And I've been telling them for the last 3 months, you have a unique chance of doing something because the European government, which will have a elected European Parliament in June of next year, is a very funny government because it has no powers over common criminals, it has no powers to mint or print money. That government was started to cut down the power of national governments. Well, they more or less forgot that during the last 20 years, and now they are adding on to national power. But this is a thing where I'm trying to convince the National European Association of Manufacturers to set up a think tank and a lobbying force. And if everything goes well, it will be early enough in the game to gear it towards a libertarian attitude where the Secretary General of this association has some interest. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Mike. And now we have from South America, Rosa Maria Gomar from Guatemala. I mean, not South America, of course, Latin America.
Well, I would like to tell you about a process we have had since 1960 in Guatemala. We were living a Keynesian period in Guatemala. That was the best thing in the world, okay? So Dr. Ayau and about five or six friends of him got together and founded a Center for Economic Studies. And their aim was to publish a little pamphlet every 2 weeks and send it free. I mean, they got a telephone guide and started to send it. They were financed by themselves. In 1968, they started with the idea of founding a university, a private university that would give a lot of quality to the academic studies. That was their second aim. Their first aim was, of course, to get to the people to know about free market and liberty. But they put it in a way that academic was the best thing, and you know, it was a way of selling the idea. After 5 years of fighting with the National University and with the other private universities, we got the permission of creating the university. And in 1972, the university started to go. So in 1976, the first promotion of graduates comes out. I'm one of them. And we have another one there, Sandra de Alfaro too. And I want to say that it has been really a big thing. I mean, we all, or at least I went in with this a little bit socialist idea. You don't know if you're capitalist or you're right or you're left. I mean, you are too young and you have not considered an alternative. When you start thinking about the good things on one side, but they've got bad things too, and the same thing on the other side. But the problem is you don't understand economics. So the first thing that the university did was to put, even if you wanted to study architecture, law, medicine, anything, you have to study a year of economics. So all the students of the university have to go through this course. It's been very difficult to, in a year, to put all the problems of economics, but we do the foundations of it, and I'm a teacher now, and I think we have done it very good. I mean, it's very interesting to see how people and young people start to change and think the right thing. Okay. In 1975, we had one of the students of the university founded a magazine that was supposed to be a university magazine. But at the end, he made his evaluation and said, no, this will be a businessman magazine. We wanted to project the idea of free market, but it had to be done in a way that businessmen would be willing to read the magazine. So we have business reports, prices of our import and export products in an index and beautifully done, you know, and a lot of course of very good articles. In 1975, a group of about 15 persons came together and formed what we call Ateneo Liberal. That's a liberal Ateneo. I don't know. It's just a name that we gave to a small group of people concerned about getting deeper into the thoughts of free market, because at the university you come up to a certain level and then you have to read by yourself. And if you don't have a discipline, you won't do it. And also we wanted to get together, because we were so few, and we wanted to get together and be together twice a month. So every two Thursdays we get together and talk about the progresses that have been made. There have come a lot of good ideas out. And in 1976, we, and I'm always talking as we because it's of this group, you know, started a TV program. This is a news program, as a ABC News or BBC News or this, also oriented to the businessman, so that he will place a commercial there, so that it will be a good business. I mean, it will be self-financed and profitable. And it became, at the beginning, it was very difficult. All these things have been verified. I mean, it was very difficult to get the financial for to do it, and to get people started and with low wages and all of these kind of things, just because you believe in, so you do it. So we did it, and it has been going up in the rating because of the quality of the news. And of course, we have editorials and criticizing the measures of government in price controls, and any kind of thing, they will comment them. And of course, we had problems there too, because then we had to, we started to have menaces, I think you say, menaces of, please, you have to close your mouth. So
your time is just about up. Your time is just about up.
Time is up. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you very much. So much activity, political activity, can't be far behind. Now we have Leon Loeb from South Africa.
Roger, if I may say that I could well, since people are discussing countries they're not from, add some comments on Southwest Africa and Rhodesia, which have quite interesting developments. So I'll take slightly longer than 5 minutes, if that's okay.
Six and a half.
Right. Referring to your gavel reminds me of that lovely story which you presumably all know, some of you will know, about the speaker with his gavel. The president, the chairman with the gavel, and the speaker carried on too long, and he wanted to knock the gong to tell him to stop. And he swung to hit the gong and hit the fellow next to him on the head, who slid under the table, and you heard the voice coming up, please hit me again, I can still hear him. Anyhow, the prospects of libertarianism, I might say that for those of you who know the Mont Pelerin Society, you'll have noticed that for the first time in its history, I think, there have been South African representatives here, and there are six of them. And there were possibly going to be more. Some tried to come at the last minute but couldn't arrange it. So that's a good sign. South Africa calls itself a free enterprise country, and every single political party in South Africa that I know of says it stands for free enterprise, although it's not necessarily the case. And but we don't have any party that will, black, white, big, small, that will declare itself to be communist or socialist. We do have a mixed economy. We have a lot of state intervention, but not as much as you people would probably assume from the kind of press reports you get. South Africans who oppose the government internally often tend to defend it abroad because we want to bring people back to what the realities of the thing are. Now, sort of libertarianism, there are a few libertarians in the proper sense of the word in South Africa, and they started being active in 1975. There are not many, only a handful. I think a figure of 20 that I know of would probably be a guess. And I think there are probably a lot more that I don't know of. Ayn Rand's books are fairly popular in South Africa. They sell well, so presumably there are lots of objectivists around who we haven't established contact with. Now, one of significant development in South Africa was the formation of the Free Market Foundation, which I'm the executive director of, which isn't a libertarian foundation, but involves quite an interesting departure from the way that free enterprise has been promoted anywhere else that I know of. And what has happened here is that it has combined representatives of industry, commerce, labor, the consumer movements, the mines, every single movement is involved. Now, those are strange bedfellows, as you can guess, but the success of this is that you have all these groups getting together regularly and talking about how to promote free enterprise. And it's had quite phenomenal effects on the labor union movement and the consumer movement, to the extent that the labor movement is now opposing minimum wage laws and the consumer movement is opposing price control. Indeed, price control is being investigated with a view to repeals, just about all of it in South Africa. Rent control has been repealed, and and I made the statement to Milton Friedman yesterday that South Africa is probably the country in the world that's moving more rapidly than any other towards free enterprise. The amount of deregulation that's taken place in the last 12 months is actually quite significant. In the area of blacks, it's substantial. And in the area of general economic interventions, quite a lot. The foundation has almost what I would call a Fabian society strategy. It's not a visible headline-creating organization. It infiltrates, it has cells, it deals with important people directly, and has, again, a very significant impact without being visible. And it's probably an idea which could be applicable elsewhere. The other thing is there's a magazine called The Individualist, which is published in South Africa, has a small circulation, and it is a purely libertarian magazine, and occasionally carries articles which I wished people elsewhere, the other parts of the libertarian movement, could see. There were two very significant books in South Africa, the first by South Africa, what I would call the Afrikaans equivalent of Harry Oppenheimer, the major Afrikaans businessman, called Assault on Private Enterprise, which was a fairly good statement from a libertarian point of view, and he rocked South Africa rigid to the extent that the Prime Minister was called upon to refute the book in Parliament, and all he did was attack the person and never said anything about the book. The second book was written by the gentleman sitting over there, Professor Lombard, who the book isn't libertarian, but it goes certainly a long way towards it from the current South African position, and that was a contribution from an academic. There is a substantial climate of deregulation in South Africa. I've got 1.5 minutes to go. But other laws come in. The other major thing is South Africa is currently drawing up a new constitution, and there is a substantial possibility that it will include a Bill of Rights and possibly an entrenchment of a general kind of statement about the free enterprise system. Turning to Southwest Africa, there is an Ayn Rand party in Southwest Africa, which is actually quite a significant party. It was started by a group of Indians and has a representative in just about every Southwest African town. And this is something which I don't know enough about. They also publish a magazine called The Individualist, which is a purely libertarian type magazine. The Southwest African Turnholler Conference, as it was called, was a getting together of all the interest groups in Southwest Africa, the races and so on, and they thrashed out a Bill of Rights, which would have been included in the Constitution had it not been for the intervention of the Big Five, the Western countries who came and stopped the progress. So it seems that they are wanting to sell out to the Marxists, by the way. all these countries who criticize South Africa for lack of democracy and so on are, it seems to us, doing everything they can to hand Southern Africa over to communists. Now, the same applies in Rhodesia. I might mention that the interim government in Rhodesia, the essential conflict in Rhodesia is now not race, but it's capitalism versus communism. Because the whites and blacks in favor of capitalism have combined, and you now have three black leaders, and Ian Smith, the white leader, in the one party, predominantly black, and these are the people who had the internal settlement. And they're not libertarian, but they certainly are a very encouraging development. The West doesn't like them, it seems, and the West would rather hand over to the Patriotic Front, who are the current terrorists and the communists. That is a synopsis of the position.
Thank you, Leon. Jean-Pierre Hamelius of Luxembourg will tell us about France and Germany.
Germany first. There I cannot give much information, but I have been seeing the last years that many of our colleagues, even some members of the MPS, have moved more and more to our side. Because, as you know, Germany made a tremendous thing after the war with its social market economy that worked so well in comparison with other countries that many of them had not even to inquire about there being too much government interventionism and dirigism. Now with the years, centralized government has come back to Germany too, so many liberal, genuine liberal economists are seeing that they have been going too far to the left and inquire our, ideology to go on. On the other hand, the German Liberal Party has been losing constantly members. Most of them went to the right-wing Christian Democrat called the Christlich Soziale Union with its now world-famous leader, Franz Josef Strauss. But so far, I do not see with these people that they are coming along our lines, despite the fact that our member, Otto von Habsburg, has joined them now and will run for European elections. But Otto von Habsburg, I'm sure, will bring in some of our ideas there too. That's for Germany. For France, very good news. And you heard already from Professor Hayek, so I can be more short. Moreover, Monsieur Henri Lepage had another meeting, so he apologized for not being here. The information I give you are partly his, partly mine. First, my, because they are very short. I'm spending part of the year now in southern France, and I have a small house there. They used to call it villa in these places, and you have to give the villa a name. I gave it the name of the Libertarian. Up to last year, most Frenchmen coming there, even tourists, asked me, what's the meaning of that? I could explain it. Now I haven't to explain it anymore because with Lepage and those called the Nouveaux Economistes, some French young professors of economics like Jean-Jacques Rosa, they have made the word libertarian and the French language. And that's most important for France. And here you see an article by L'Express, the famous Jean-Jacques Servan Schreiber, a newspaper, a radical socialist party. They even mentioned it, and that was good publicity for our side. So the word libertarian and anarcho-capitalist has penetrated the French language. That's very important. And Professor Hayek also did underline it, as goes Paris or France in the intellectual field, you may be sure other countries on the continent will follow. I mean Belgium, I mean Luxembourg, I even mean Germany, because these new economists have been discussed very much. And their tactic had been as follows. Some of you may have heard about 9 months ago, there came out in France those called the new philosophers. because they were opposing Marxism and so on. Some of them had discovered that Marx and others were at the origin of the totalitarianism. And I presume that our French friends just chose the title New Economist to get the same attention than these men had got. And their plan is as follows on the higher level. They will go on with publishing good books. Several have already been published. Here's my copy of Lepage's first book, De Male Capitalisme. See the challenging title, Tomorrow We'll Get Capitalism. And it's so well known, not only in Europe, I spent some time a week in Poland in June as a representative, with a Luxembourg delegation, and there even they have been reading about the book. And one copy of mine has been sent to Poland to a young man of political science. So these Frenchmen on the higher level, they try to get intellectuals in the universities and so on. Later on I may give you the titles of those books, four or five books that have already been published by some of them. On a lower level, they will try to contact journalists and political leaders. And on a European scale, a level, there will be a meeting at a place called Le Puy. I heard that Mike Van Noten is going to join them, probably. They will discuss already the future movement. So you see, in France, I'm very optimistic. They, however, are not willing to join any other party. They want to be kept strictly and, how shall I say, ideological purist in face of other parties, because many parties in France now call themselves liberals. The word is getting up again. May I get one word on Luxembourg, Roch?
Sure.
Yes. In Luxembourg, despite the fact that I'm very often absent, I got some national attention when I banged the door on the Luxembourg Liberal Party, which is world famous owing to the fact that its president is also the president of the Liberal International. That's very important. And I myself, I'm working now